No, that's it. What you're seeing here, it wouldn't be any different were it Exxon or, it would be different if it was Citgo because we would already be bombing Venezuela.
True. But, I mean, even on the beaches, what right does a private corporation have to tell the public whether or not to be on a public beach? If the President of the United States thinks that that is dangerous, he can call out the National Guard.
Precisely.
And restrict them. But it isn't for a goddamn public corporation and a foreign one at that to tell Americans where and where they can't go inside the United States of America. And we need a president that happens to know that. And, you know, if Obama doesn't, let's have Biden.
That video footage was out there last week of the journalist down on the beach being sort of shaken down by some rent-a-cop security guy. And he looked, bless his heart, the journalist looked at him and said, unless you're a representative of the sheriff of whatever parish it was, you have no jurisdiction.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about that. I was out gathering up those little coniferous twigs that you beat yourself with while you're in the sauna. That's what I was doing. Yeah. But it's all good now. We've got a balmy 95 degrees. This is our hottest day in the Head On Radio Network sauna thus far. Ah, throw some more water on the hot rocks, Agnes. It's not hot enough in here yet. Woo! Mercy. Nah, the fact of the matter is that it was much more prosaic than that. At the last minute, Bill Gates told me that he wanted to update the production computer here, and therefore, well, you know, what Bill Gates says he wants, Bill Gates by God gets, right? Right. That's usually how that works. So that's where I was. Interestingly, I started the update process at about 5 minutes until the hour. Oh, well, these things happen. But I'm here, you're there. The chat room is beginning to fill up. And I think we've got a pretty interesting evening's discussion ahead of us. Three things, really. First of all, right before airtime, I got to admit I had immersed myself in the much ballyhooed article about General Stanley McChrystal that's gotten him in the deep stuff, apparently, the article from Rolling Stone. And I got to say, it's pretty interesting reading. I have not been paid to endorse the story, nor would I have you believe that I had been. But you can read it by going over to rollingstone.com. It's, I guess it hits the stands 3 days from now, Friday the 25th, but you can read it now. And it paints a rather interesting picture of General McChrystal. And, you know, I asked that question, and I've been asking for years now. I asked the question last night, where is our Alexander the Great? Well, hint, having read the article at Rolling Stone, it ain't Stanley McChrystal. No, Stanley McChrystal is a self-important little martinet who has surrounded himself with hoo-ah hollering toadies, who have no more of an idea about how to, quote-unquote, win in Afghanistan than a hog has about how to tie his shoes over his cloven hooves. No clue. But if you read the article, you'll find that he is surrounded by people who are absolutely dedicated little cultists. And they are a disturbing lot. There's an element in there, well, I don't know. Maybe we'll take a look at it later in the program. What lit me up earlier in the day, though, as I'm sure you probably know or would have guessed, is this article, the articles, numerous of them, hitting the series of tubes all day long or all afternoon long, about federal judge Martin Feldman. He is the U.S. District Court judge for the Eastern District of Louisiana. No, not that Marty Feldman. Igor, help me with the bags. All right, you take the blonde, and I'll take the one with the toy bin. No, I wish we were dealing with a Marty Feldman that quick of wit, that humane, that urbane, that sophisticated. But no, we are dealing with United States District Judge Martin Crossleach Feldman. I wish the hell I was making that big old mouthful of a name up. What ump? Werewolf, there wolf, there castle. Would that I were talking about such a man. But no, I'm not. I'm talking, by God, brethren and sistren. Oh, this is Tuesday, not Wednesday. Got to hold off on the brethren and the sistren. No, I'm talking about United States District Court Judge Martin Crossleach Feldman. Leach Cross, I'm not sure, but there's a leech in there somewhere. In fact, I think it runs the better part of his brain. Martin Leach the Honorable. The Honorable Martin Crossleach Feldman today issued an immediate injunction, immediately demanding and commanding the Obama administration to lift the moratorium on drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. I like to say it in Spanish just because I know that it drives the teabaggers apeshit. There's a lot of story out there about Martin Leach Cross Feldman. Not Cross Leach, Leach Cross. Martin Leach Cross Feldman. Let's see, what kind of a history did he have? Well, he graduated from Tulane University Law School in 1957. He was a member of the Order of the Coif. That's a sort of little Phi Beta Kappa kind of thingy for law school students. You know, people who have no lives and live in the carrels of the law library, and you only see them come out once in a while for meals. You know, they grow bat wings while they're doing that. Having graduated in 1957, Judge Martin Crossleach Feldman. No, Leach Cross. See, I'm going to have trouble with that all night. Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman. He became the first law clerk for Judge John Minor Wisdom. He then served as Judge Wisdom's law clerk in the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals from 1957 to 1959. Then he went to practice in New Orleans until October of 1983. In practicing law, he focused on tax law and complex commercial litigation. That should not be inspiring. That means more likely than not that he spent his working life doing the bidding of corporate predators in the Crescent City. But then in 1983, the call came. Why, yes, Lord, yes, Martin Leach Cross Feldman. I could do something about that hump. What hump? Martin Leach Cross Feldman was appointed to the federal bench by dear old, halfway to senile, if not more than, Ronnie Reagan. And he has sat there on the bench of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana for yea, verily, the last 27 years, sucking away at the public teat. Let's see, if you figure out ordinary, 1957, 1952. So he'd be born about what, 1932? 68, so he's 78 years old. He's 78 years old, or so, or thereabouts, and has about as much of a vested interest in what happens on this planet 50 years from now as that aforementioned hog does in tap dancing. That is U.S. District Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman. Ron in Raleigh asking, Bob, you want to put any money on whether this lying, murderous, self-promoting swine will be fired? Oh, I think this would be General McChrystal. Remember, this is the bastard that engineered the Pat Tillman cover-up. I expect to see this guy on the Republican ticket in the future. We've become a country that is being run behind the scenes by a military financial cabal, and I think there's a hell of a lot of truth in that. So we've got two, that's two bastards. That's two bastards for Tuesday. Two bastard Tuesday. Maybe we've finally gotten our Tuesday theme. No, we've got bastards aplenty, the fact be known. Martin, Leach, Cross, Feldman, and General Stanley McChrystal. But we've got one more set of bastards to work to pull out from behind the baseboards. But we're not done with the Honorable Martin, Leach, Cross, Feldman. No, not even a little bit. Martin, Leach, Cross, Feldman. Today, in a case that was brought by an offshore service and supply company, a dozen of them, sued to lift the ban on offshore drilling until we figured out what the hell exactly went wrong with the Deepwater Horizon BP disaster. Martin Leach Cross Feldman wrote, "The court is unable to divine or fathom a relationship between the findings and the immense scope of the moratorium. The blanket moratorium with no parameters seems to assume that because one rig failed, and although no one yet fully knows why, all companies and rigs drilling new wells over 500 feet also universally present an imminent danger. The court cannot substitute its judgment for that of the agency, but the agency must cogently explain why it has exercised its discretion in a given manner, and it has not done so." So to review, unable to divine or fathom a relationship. Well, see, Judge Feldman, that's your first problem. You're not on the bench with a parrot with a damn peach twig to do any divining. This ain't the rainmaker, son. You're not supposed to be fathoming anything. You're supposed to make decisions based upon facts and law presented before you in the case of an injunction. Also, in the injunction, since it is injunctive relief, and therefore in the old school of equitable reasoning, the plaintiffs should have been forced to present to you some level of proof that they had no other adequate remedy at law, and that they would have been irreparably harmed by your failure to lift the injunction. I fail to see where you would find either of those things as compared. And you know, even if you find those things, you also have to bear in mind the harm being brought upon the United States, the waters of the United States, and the people of the United States, and the land of the United States. And you have to balance those two, Judge. Damn, you'd think, I got to explain this to a, well, yes, of course I do, because he's a Reagan appointee. Probably has to have shoe tying explained to him every morning. But imagine that. He's unable to divine or fathom a relationship between the findings and the immense scope of the moratorium. Really? The worst case scenario that may come true, may be coming true, not sure. The fact that DP Horizon's well was drilled in 5,000 feet of seawater and they had not a clue of what to do, as it turned out, no clue what to do when the thing went south. when everything turned sideways and the oil started shooting out, and you can't fathom a relationship why we ought not be doing any more of this until we know how to fix it when it goes bad? Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman Wathamp. In the course of this order, Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman, see, whenever there's an assassin or something out there like John Wilkes Booth or I don't know, Mark David Chapman, we always give their full names. Well, this son of a bitch in the Eastern District of Louisiana is every bit the assassin, even though he's wearing the black robes, well, like a murder of crows. Yeah, David in Tennessee, you're probably right. Now, Bob, some of those oil boys probably presented that set of reasons for fathoming to the judge down to Emeralds the night before. Too true. Too true. It is, you know, forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown, which also applies to southern Louisiana. This is disturbing on a number of levels, not the least of which being the fact that Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman has conflicts of interest that would choke a maggot, that would vomit a vulture. Let's see. He overturned this moratorium as arbitrary and capricious. With the reasoning that it would, quote, have an immeasurable effect on the plaintiffs, local economy, the Gulf region, and the critical present-day aspect of the availability of domestic energy in this country. Whoopsie. Because, of course, the immeasurable effect is on, yes, the local economy, which is being devastated not by a lack of drilling, but by what BP did. The Gulf region, which is being devastated not by the lack of drilling, but what BP did. And the critical present-day aspect of the availability of domestic energy in this country. Well, all that domestic energy is bubbling out into the Gulf right now, ain't it? And ain't it gonna suck, Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman? Ain't it just gonna suck when another one of them things goes sideways and starts spewing it at you? It's gonna suck. Bad. Real bad. What are you gonna say then, Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman? About the immeasurable effect on the plaintiffs. Well, hell, if it's immeasurable, Judge, they didn't have no business in court because they didn't have no standing. Immeasurable, my ass. No, it turns out it's very measurable. And it's very personally measurable to Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman. Because as of his last filing, Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman has stocks in the following organizations. BlackRock, between $12,000 and $36,000 worth. That's his income. That's not how much he owns. That's his income, how much he made last year. Let's see. He has vast amounts of holdings in J.P. Morgan Chase. Oh, my goodness, look, it's a BP financier. Wait a minute. J.P. Morgan Chase, didn't they host the Round the Island race that Tony Hayward was sailing his yacht Bob in last weekend? Why, by God, I do think so. Ocean Energy, he's invested between $1,000 and $2,500. NGP Capital Resources, between $1,000 and $2,500. Quicksilver Resources, $5,000 and $15,000. Hercules Offshore, $6,000 and $17,500. Provident Energy, Peabody Energy, son of a bitch, Peabody Energy, the bastards in coal, too. Penn Growth Energy, RPC Inc., Atlas Energy Resources, Parker Drilling, TXCO Resources, EV Energy Partners, Rowan Companies, BPZ Resources, El Paso Corporation, KBR Inc. Holy cow, look! It's Kellogg Burning Loot! Chesapeake Energy and ATP Oil and Gas. In his opinion, he wrote, oil and gas production is quite simply elemental to Gulf communities. And what he meant to write was, oil and gas production is quite simply elemental to my pocketbook. Dirty bastard. Think Progress's Ian Millhiser wrote, industry ties among federal judges are so widespread that they are beginning to endanger the court's ability to conduct routine business. Noting, last month so many members of the right-wing Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals were forced to recuse themselves from an appeal against various energy and chemical companies that there weren't enough untainted judges left to allow the court to hear the case. Amazing. But that's the state of justice in this country today. Yet never mind the pathetic sight of those birds covered in oil. Never mind the tar balls. Never mind the thuggish behavior of whatever the private security company is that BP has hired to protect the cleanup workers from journalists. Never mind all of that. There's money out there in the Gulf. Because you see, and this is the important part, part of that $20 billion so-called shakedown of BP, that was for direct recompensation of people whose lives had been interrupted by these activities, this negligence, this woeful, willful, wanton, grossly negligent, absent of concern of any sort of normal human being engaged in the same or similar conduct behavior that BP engaged in. That's what it was there for. That's what lawsuits are for. But you see, Judge Martin Cross, Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman wanted to see if he couldn't do a little bit of an end run. Because, see, he didn't want to be sitting in on no complex litigation, because that's what he specialized on back when he was a corporate pig lawyer in New Orleans. He focused on the complex litigation. He didn't want to be sitting through years of that complex litigation between people who had been ruined BP and BP, you see. No, Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman had a conflict of interest as high as the eye can see. But he couldn't see it himself because, well, he's an honest bastard. And as an honest bastard, once bought, he stays bought. He didn't issue that ruling today against the Obama administration or the Environmental Protection Agency or Department of Interior or any of that. No, hell no. He issued that ruling today against me, far away in West Virginia. He issued that ruling today against you on the California coastline. He issued that ruling against you in the great Northwest and in those among those magnificent forests and those soaring mountain peaks. He issued it against you in New York City. He issued it against you in Ohio, you in Tennessee, you in Georgia, you in Alabama. He issued it against every single member, every single citizen of the United States of America in favor of the oil industry, and it is abundantly clear. What else is clear? This much is clear. Judge Martin Leachcross Feldman is he's an activist judge. See, the right wing hauls that phrase out whenever they want to be talking about some judge that might actually give a damn about human rights, about the rights of, for instance, a gay couple, one of whom is in the hospital and the other one wants to come visit, to simply be able to visit or attend to financial affairs or estate matters. No, if a judge says that those rights exist, he's an activist judge. But this is activist judging. When the clear facts of what is going on in the Gulf with one well, in situations in which there is no guarantee whatsoever, because remember, those mitigation plans for disasters were almost entirely alike, whether it be Shell or ExxonMobil or BP or any of the other thug corporations. They all had the same disaster plan that called for saving the walruses and the seals and the damn sea otters that aren't there. See, look what a good job we did. But Judge Martin Leach Feldman, he couldn't fathom, he couldn't divine a connection. Divine a connection. Kiss my ass. Kiss my ass, Judge Martin Leach Feldman. Kiss my ass. You corporate thug in a black robe. You predator on the waters and lands of the people of the United States of America. You dispenser not of justice, Martin Cross Leach Cross Feldman, but of corporate cronyism. You dispenser of favoritism. You activist judge. So that's where we begin tonight. This Tuesday on the Horn. Toasty 95 degrees in the studio. You know the number. Ring right in. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob. We'll be back. right, did I mention that Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman also owns stock in Halliburton and Transocean itself? Because they do. He does. They own him. He owns them. It's kind of hard to tell after a while. And, of course, you know how it works, and anybody who's ever played in these fields can tell you. The plaintiffs made sure, I'm certain, that none of the corporate cronies he owns stock in were listed as named plaintiffs. Because that way the judge could say, well, I don't have a financial interest in any of this. Bull. And if you want to take a minute and consider the meaning of systemic failure, this is it. It is the fact that no lawyer, because of the phony baloney artificial sense of decorum that has to be delivered to the court, no lawyer can stand up in court and say, Judge, you're crooked. You're dirty, you're crooked, and you have no business on this case. Because that judge will be royally thrashed. What have I told you? The legal system in this country is concerned with three things. Managing the morons, punishing the mean ones, and above all, protect the money. And that's what happened in the Eastern District of Louisiana today. The money, first and foremost, was protected. Protect the money. This decision didn't have a damn thing about people rowing ham sandwiches out to oil platforms. This had everything in the world to do with protecting the money, the drilling, the next nightmare breakout in the Gulf. It is... it is a tragedy. The failure, and this is a systemic example of it, the failure of the judicial system is the worst threat this country faces domestically. Simply put, the right wing for years has had the good sense to be out there going hammer and tongs at the judicial system so as to get exactly this type of corporate crony on the bench, Martin Leach Cross Feldman, who has no vested interest in the future because he has so little of his own. And he has lifetime tenure. It doesn't matter if he's dribbling Fix-A-Dent into his coffee cup. He has lifetime tenure on the bench. He can screw America to the wall like a butterfly pinned in an insect collection. The White House does say that they're appealing and that they're working on it right now. You want a little projection of how that works? Yeah, let me look up the sleeves past that silly sleeve spring in my frayed velvet robe with the moon and stars on it. Here's how that works. The Obama administration appeals the injunction. The plaintiffs say, well, we've gone back to work. You'd be stopping work now. And the court, manned by another group of corporate cronies, because remember, we let through the corporate cronies when Democrats had the Senate for fear that Bill the Cat Killer Frist might, go nuclear and end the filibuster. So they've got their thugs on the bench. Meanwhile, Obama's appointments, tepid though they may be, are still waiting confirmation. Something like 120 of them. They did the same thing in the Clinton administration. Not that either Bill Clinton or Barack Obama was prone to appointing any wild-eyed legal jurisprudential theorists who would actually come close to doing justice in this country. Oh, hell no. Come on, don't kid yourself. No. But the appeal is underway. See, that's the thing. There really, if you ever attend a criminal trial, when the judge charges the jury, he'll say something about the almost limitless powers of the state in bringing a prosecution. Well, that, you know, if it's Podunk County, Arkansas, the powers are pretty limited. But I got news for you. They're limited on the federal level, too. The resources are not endless. You have to make judgment calls about what's worth fighting for and what's not. So as a consequence, I bring to your attention, just as a for instance, another ruling, this one of the Supreme Court of the United States. This one having come down in the last day or so. And this one has to do with, just a minute, I'll find it here. This one's a Supreme Court case. And this one is as potentially deadly as Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman's decision. Only this one was rendered Monday by the Supreme Court of the United States in a 7-1 vote. 7-1. One lone dissenter. And this thing has the power to screw everything sideways. The Supreme Court ruled Monday that a federal judge went too far. That's code for was not obsequious enough to the money. A federal judge went too far when he banned the planting of genetically engineered alfalfa seeds after claims were put forward before him that those plants might in turn be environmentally devastating. The federal appeals court ruling had held that it was right and proper to prohibit, there's the money, Monsanto Corporation from selling alfalfa seeds because they are resistant to the popular weed killer Roundup. The USDA press secretary is Caleb Weaver, the United States Department of Agriculture. He said, in light of the Supreme Court's decision to invalidate the lower court's injunction, the USDA is moving forward with the completion of the environmental impact statement on the deregulation of Roundup Ready alfalfa, and nothing in the Supreme Court's decision affects that ongoing process. Except that the Supreme Court did what the Supreme Court did. Monsanto's senior vice president and general counsel said, this Supreme Court ruling is important for every American farmer, not just alfalfa growers. All growers can rely on the expertise of USDA and trust that future challenges to biotech approvals must now be based on scientific facts and not speculation. In other words, the money got what the money wanted. Because, this is no place, and I'm probably not the guy to deliver the big genetically modified discourse. But you think, alfalfa? Really, Bob? You're worked up about alfalfa? Yeah, really. Bob's worried about alfalfa. But it's not really alfalfa I'm worried about. It's cross-pollination. You see, what had happened below is a federal judge in San Francisco, damn liberals, barred the planting of Roundup Ready alfalfa, which is a form of alfalfa that's been genetically modified so that a disastrously poisonous petrochemical derivative sprayed upon it can't kill it but kills everything around it. He barred the planting of it until the government could adequately study the crop's potential impact on organic and conventional varieties of alfalfa. Because, you see, these are plants, and they do this thing called pollination. And pollen, surprisingly enough, has a real propensity to travel. It's in the nature. Well, look, it's no different than what human beings do. We cross-pollinate, too. Humans interbreed with other humans, and we make different humans, and out of populations, we evolve. Not that I would want to go too deeply, but you see, Monsanto wanted to put it out there and just start selling it because, well, it's good for the money. Never mind if it's good for the world, good for the crop, good for the soil, good for the farmers, or good for your innards, or your cows, or your horses, or your... What? It's good for the money. And what's good for the money is good for Monsanto, and what's good for Monsanto is good for you. And, well, you know, and everybody has a share. St. Louis, this from the New York Times story, St. Louis-based Monsanto argued that the ban was too broad and was based on the assumption that its products were harmful. Opponents of the use of genetically engineered seeds say they can contaminate conventional crops. But Monsanto says such cross-pollination is unlikely. Well, for those of you who haven't, I highly recommend the documentary Food, Inc., and particularly the segment on farming. Because you see, if Monsanto, because they are a predatory corporation, and operating in farm country, Monsanto acts like, well, the mob, knee-breaking and litigating to try to break anyone who doesn't want to be compelled to buy seed from Monsanto and instead prefers to engage in the ancient and time-honored human practice of saving seed from one harvest to plant for the next one. Because, see, that's the trick. You can't plant saved seed from Monsanto, or Monsanto will sue your toenails off. Because that's the whole gig. You have to buy from Monsanto every year. It's like paying protection money to the Cosa Nostra. Because that's what Monsanto is, an agricultural Cosa Nostra. Alfalfa, which is used for livestock feed and can be planted in spring or fall, is a major crop grown on about 22 million acres in the U.S., Monsanto said in court papers. Monsanto's alfalfa is made from genetic material from bacteria that make the crop resistant to Roundup. Monsanto versus Gersten Seed Farms. Because, you see, if this stuff is allowed to get loose, every last bit of the seed stock in this country will be put at hazard. Because, again, I love how things from the previous night have a way of working into the next night's program. You see, that whole idea of unintended consequences has a way of biting us in the butt. Well, it's highly unlikely that it would but what happens when it does? And you can ask that to the Supreme Court of the United States. Or you can ask it to Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman. What happens, Judge Feldman, when one of those deep ocean rigs does go bad when the next one does. Because, you see, BP's filing said, well, it's highly unlikely anything could possibly go wrong. Just like Monsanto said, and just like Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman seems willing to believe, and there's that dangerous word again, lurking, 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 forever lurking in the backgrounds of our nightmares, believe. I don't care what they believe, it's what they know that is scaring the pants off of me. And what they don't know is the kind of thing that makes you sit up at night at 3 a.m. bolt upright with the little beads of sweat gathering at your hairline and running down salty into the corners of your eyes and making them sting and making you shut them and to make the nightmare go away. Because alfalfa planted on land that's genetically modified holds in its very nature the same seeds of doom that was it. Oh, it was 1,000 barrels, then it was 5,000 barrels, and then it was revised upward to 20,000 barrels, and now it's 40,000 barrels. But it might really be 100,000 barrels of oil, all of which are the seeds of our doom. But not in a courtroom of the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana, and not along the hallowed bench of the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Oh, no. No, for the only thing that gets protected in there is the money. There were no small businessmen protected in Louisiana today. Judge Martin Cross Leach Cross Feldman's stock portfolio is what got protected in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana today. Is there anyone who thinks any differently? Because it seems abundantly obvious to me. Your thoughts, of course, are always welcome. You know the number I trust. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes rolling into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. It's all that easy. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. What do you think about it, Mr. Zevon? This is The Horn. Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is next.
And a hard place, and I'm down on losing money. The shit has hit the fan. Guns and money. Yes. Send lawyers, guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money.
It's Tuesday, June 22nd, 2010.
Right from the beginning, BP was either lying or grossly incompetent.
100,000 barrels a day. Moratorium no more, says a federal judge. Plus, praying the spill away.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Louisiana remains a state under siege. Yesterday, the state Senate finally took action. I could turn this whole thing around.
Today has been designated a statewide day of prayer across Louisiana. Now, according to that resolution, it says thus far efforts made by mortals to try to solve the crisis have come to no avail. It is clearly time for a miracle for us.
Sure, that'll work. Why not?
The oil is under a mile of seawater and another 2.5 miles of solid sediment earth, so I think God's done enough to prevent these spills.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that. Good point, John Stewart. Hey, God, this is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored in part by Velvet Revolution's new campaign, ProtectOurElections.org, fighting for real election reform in Congress once and for all. Please join the fight against corporate influence, voter suppression, and unverifiable privatized voting systems. Sign the petition to demand election reform from Congress now at ProtectOurElections.org. That's ProtectOurElections.org. Okay, Des, just before airtime, we got news of a verdict coming down from a federal district court in New Orleans overriding the President of the United States.
Yes, we'll get to that and other oil disaster news in a moment. But first, wildfire season is off to a roaring start. Wildfire driven by high winds near and around Flagstaff, Arizona, has grown to over 10,000 acres in just 2 days. It's only about 10% contained. Some 1,000 homes have been evacuated, and authorities believe it may have been sparked by an abandoned campfire. So remember, only you can prevent forest fires. And the death toll is rising in China, where heavy rains and flooding over the weekend have killed nearly 200 people, according to Chinese officials. 2.3 million were evacuated from their homes after a dike burst. Brazil is also dealing with a record deluge across two northern states. The death toll is at 40 and rising, 1,000 people missing, and an estimated 100,000 left homeless. The International Whaling Commission is considering lifting the ban on commercial whaling, but more than 200 scientists have called on the commission to hold on to that ban. The commission is considering a proposal this week to lift the 24-year-old ban, which critics say is ignored by Japan, Norway, and Iceland anyway, but they say they'll do it in exchange for a quota system, which presumably means those countries would honor that. As we enter into the third month of the BP oil disaster, as Brad mentioned just as we went into studio, the federal judge in New Orleans blocked the six-month moratorium on offshore drilling that applied to new permits and halted work on 33 exploratory wells. And this just in, the White House now says it will appeal the judge's decision. The suit was brought by several companies that provide services to the industry, like ferrying people and supplies to offshore rigs. It was also joined by the governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal. The U.S. District Judge Martin Feldman said the Interior Department failed to provide adequate reasoning for the moratorium and also questioned the assumption that because one rig failed, the others were an imminent danger.
Oh, my Lord. So the basis for this was just that this particular judge felt that there was no good reason to
stop exploratory wells in any other part of the Gulf, even though, and we already know this, that congressional investigators have shown that the oil spill response plans of all of the oil companies are grossly inadequate to handle any kind of accident of any size.
Haley Barbour, governor of Alabama, should be happy about this.
Yes, he was on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday.
Governor, what's worse, the moratorium or the effects of this spill on the region?
The spill's a terrible thing, but the moratorium is a terrible thing. It's not only bad for the region, it's bad for America.
Unlike the spill, which is great for America, he went on to say that this is going to cause the cost of oil to skyrocket. I'm not sure that skyrocketing cost of oil actually would be bad for America. Maybe it'll get us back on point where we were a few months ago when the prices skyrocketed and we were rushing to get electric cars onto the roads.
Yeah, in the summer of 2008, when oil went up to a record high of $147 a barrel, twice what it is right now. And there was no oil crunch going on then.
And I'm still waiting for my electric car.
Now, BP says it is now capturing over 25,000 barrels a day. That's equivalent of 1 million gallons. But also on Sunday's Meet the Press, Congressman Ed Markey of Massachusetts released yet another internal memo showing BP engineers initially feared a much higher toll.
I actually have a document that shows that BP actually believes it could go upwards of 100,000 barrels per day, which would be about 4 million barrels a day.
Just amazing. Yes, first they said 1,000 barrels a day. They were estimating it could be as high as 100,000. As far as I can tell, that means their first estimate was off by some 90,000%.
And yet, the moratorium has been lifted. We better not have any more accidents in the Gulf on any of these exploratory wells.
For more on that and the rest of the day's news on the oil gusher in the Gulf, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Let's take a ride.
Well, I love it when technology goes sideways. Let's pull that thing down before the music starts playing. welcome back to the second hour. What in the world is happening here? Let's see. Let's make this stop. Yeah, okay. You're not going to play. No, you've completely crashed. Oh, dear. You know, someday I'll have a producer. Let's see. End task. No, I don't send. Okay, well, maybe that takes care of that. Jesus. Welcome back to the program. We had that nifty little second hour sounder ready to play, the second hour intro, but it didn't play. And I wanted to give you all an update today before we go much further, and we're going right back to the phones. You know the number 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. If you want to jump in, you are more than welcome to do so. Just updating on the present, the omnipresent, the monkey on my back present situation. Since middle of last week, I've been trying to get hold of the guy at the county to get back with me and give me some guidance on how to go about this, because it's not something I really do. You know, digging big holes in the ground and trenches in the dirt and stuff like that. And you know, you don't want to do that. No. You need to move it 6 inches over, because then I'd just lose my mind. Well, he finally called back today. The bad news is I was out. And you know how it is. He called at like 5 minutes till four, and he leaves work at four. Right. That's, yeah, not working. But anyway, the fundraising does continue through your kind generosity. And all things being equal, we are around... we're around having raised around $3,500 if you count in if you count in part of the monthly budget and all of that kind of stuff. So things are happening, and they're going to go well, I trust. I'm started on it, so it's going to happen one way or the other. Thank you very much for all of your help. Those of you who wish to, you know, there's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, and there is a snail mail address there as well under the tab that says contribute. You know me, I still just want to crawl in a corner and suck my thumb over all of this. But instead of doing that, why don't I go to the phones? I had a chance to find out who's actually on the line, you know, like as if I had a call screener or something. And we've got Susan calling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, what's up?
Well, first of all, I would like to urge everyone tomorrow, first thing they do tomorrow morning when they get up, is pick up the phone and call their congressman and say, you are in the House of Representatives, therefore the House can impeach a federal judge.
Absolutely.
Now, yes, therefore this judge needs to be impeached for malfeasance.
The guy, yeah, Susan, the guy had stock.
Yeah, I know.
In TransOcean and Halliburton and the usual suspects.
If you're not going to flat out call it a bribe, it's called malfeasance. Because he did not recuse himself.
Well, you know, and you know, that's interesting you would bring that up, because the standard that is at play here, and there's nothing playful about it, but the standard that is in operation here is that a judge is not allowed to say, well, you know, it's not like I'm really doing anything improper. That's not the standard. The standard is that a judge shall not create the appearance of impropriety.
Yeah, they have to be like Caesar's wife.
Yes, above reproach. And this certainly does, at least in my mind, create the appearance of impropriety. But then again, to be fair, Susan, the fact that this guy is a Reagan appointee creates the appearance of impropriety in my book.
Well, yes, well, there is that, true. But, you know, that we have him on grounds. You need to call your representative. They are the only people who can impeach this guy. Fine. Let's get the House moving. We own the House. The House does things like this. They like it. Fine. Let's impeach the son of a bitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And why not? Yeah, why not? Maybe do some homework and find out who the membership is of the House Judiciary Committee. That would seem to be the natural place to start.
Well, you can start first by calling your very own congressman, and then put in your little search engine, U.S. House of Representatives, or just go to www.house.gov, and on the sidebar there, it will have committees, and you click on Judiciary, and then call the Judiciary Committee as well. Demand impeachment.
Well, let's see. Who are those members? I'm assuming that this is still current. The chairman would be the Honorable John Conyers. Howard Berman is on it. Rick Boucher is on it. Gerald Nadler is on it. I can't remember his first name. His last name is Scott. Is on it from Virginia. Let's see. Sheila Jackson Lee is on it.
Fine.
Yeah, that could be fun.
Oh yeah, when she
Maxine Waters is on it.
Oh yeah, those two together. Me. The door.
Yeah, there's some interesting folks there.
And it's that's where we need to start, because
Anthony Weiner is on it.
Oh, call Weiner's office by all means. Even if you aren't a constituent, call his office.
Just find a zip code in his constituency. That's all.
I don't even bother with that. I just call him up and say, hey, I'm calling from Oregon, and Guy, you really need to do this. I love you to death, but you really need to do this. They like hearing from people in other states, provided you're also a supporter.
Well, it seems like a worthwhile undertaking in my book, Susan.
Yeah. The House is the only people that can handle him. Let's do it.
Indeed.
get to the phones tomorrow, people. Now, the other reason I called is dear old General McChrystal.
I take it you have read the Rolling Stone article.
No, actually, I haven't.
Oh, well, you know what? Maybe you want to, and this is not to say, this is, I'm not saying anything, but you know what, Susan? And this is friendly advice. Hold your fire till you've read the Rolling Stone article.
Well, may I?
Oh, I mean, you certainly may, but wait till you read that. You're not going to be a well woman when you have.
Oh, I understand that. I am not calling about what he said in that article. I'm calling about other stuff.
Okie doke.
Pat Tillman.
Well, there is that.
The man who signed off on the cover-up was General McChrystal.
And as noted in the article, before he was given command in Afghanistan, he spent all of his time being, like, you know, a secret ops guy somewhere in the bowels of the Pentagon.
Yeah. Another thing. When Obama was getting together his plan for Afghanistan, and the right wing was jumping all over him, and the leaks were coming fast and furious. They were all out of McChrystal's office. Why? Because McChrystal was leaking them. That's why. That's why I want that man fired.
Well, like I said, when you read this article, I don't see how. Now the meeting is tomorrow, right?
I think so.
Yeah, the meeting with President Obama is tomorrow. This is a short meeting. If I'm Barack Obama, good morning.
Yeah.
You're fired.
Yeah, where's your resignation? Give me.
Right.
I don't want to see any part of you anywhere around me. Get. Because I don't know about the rest of the audience, but I remember a gentleman by the name of Curtis LeMay.
Oh. Wasn't he the model for General... Wasn't he actually the model for General Jack B. Ripper in Dr. Strangelove?
Yes, he was also the model for General Scott in 7 Days in May.
Ooh. Okay, maybe that's what I had confused. Maybe that was the character. I don't know. Could General Ripper have been based on any actual living being? I mean, except...
Ripper might have been based on MacArthur.
I don't. Well, he had a cigar where MacArthur had a corncob pipe. Well, maybe.
Yeah, but the thing is, I can remember LeMay being fired for this very reason, because this country is supposed to have civilian control of its military. If it doesn't, we are no better than your average junta.
Well, it's not just that, Susan. It's the fact that there are actual, real live, honest to goodness laws that pertain to saying things like he said, or his staff said, about the president and vice president.
And it's called Uniform Military Code of Justice.
Uniform Code of UCMJ, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
if some jarhead, you know, E1 jarhead proceeds to say something like that about his commanding officer, how fast do you think he'd end up in the brig?
Oh, do you think anybody would have gotten, away with describing a dim leader as dim leader?
Not if he was wearing a uniform.
Nope.
He'd end up in Leavenworth making little rocks out of very, very, very big ones.
Well, I'm hearing from Marty that apparently McChrystal has tendered his resignation.
Yeah, I saw that too, but I don't know if he's actually, shown up yet. Last I heard, he was still in the air.
And see, I've been so preconditioned by the last several years. Is that okay? You're Stanley McChrystal. You realize that the thing is a mess that you're not going to get out of with your reputation intact, but you're too anal retentive to resign. So you have to do something that's going to get your ass thrown out. This guy gave access. Come on, he's a general in the United States Army, and he gave access to Rolling Stone.
Uh huh.
I mean, no, it's not high times or anything, but it might as well be for the uptight anal retentive crowd. Just saying.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Well, first of all, the resignation is, you know, a pro forma. You know, he has to walk in there with it in his hand. Obama has to accept it.
Well, there's that.
Or better yet, Obama has to say, no, your resignation is not accepted. You're fired.
But you know he won't do that. He'll take the path of least resistance. Well, Susan, we've got them all stacked up, so I'll start moving through the blinkies.
There's an article on Huffington Post. I'm going to put it up on our website. The headline: Arizona immigration law, immigrant families leaving state. Prepare for Arizona's economy to crash. This is the beginning.
I'm biting my tongue. I'm biting my tongue. Because there's a real easy answer to that. Congratulations, yeah. You brought it on yourself.
Yeah, you made your bed, lay in it.
Yep.
I'm not talking to the immigrants. I'm talking to these white idiots.
White supremacist idiots.
Yeah, these fascists who thought this was going to help.
Indeed.
Make them feel better. Guys, guess what? You're about to find out the hard way what happens. They're going to leave and leave you with nothing.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Should be interesting to see. Susan, take care.
You too. Love, Agnes.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Almost 20 minutes past the hour. We continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Ben, what's up?
Well, you know, just very quickly, because I'm driving, my take on what if I were Obama, what I would do with General McChrystal, I would not take his resignation. I would tell him, no, you can't resign. Your nation needs you, and you serve at my pleasure, and you're not getting out of here until you have served an entire combat term as captain.
Ooh, just demote him and send him back into the ranks.
Demote him and send him to a unit that's taking live fire.
That, by God, has the smell of justice about it, Ben. And I love the smell of justice in the morning. It smells like victory.
Yeah. Yep. You know, the president, understand that he is completely at the president's mercy. He may not leave. Unless the president says, you will leave. If he tries to walk out on his own, well, you know, the president does not even need to resort to the code of military justice. The president may make on the spot.
Some of that broke up, but I think I got your meaning.
Yeah, he may make his own justice on the spot for that general. He does not have to resort to the universal code of military justice. The president is the exception. He is the one who instituted it all comes from his power, and his power absolutely, and so he makes his own justice.
Interesting indeed.
You take care.
All right, you too. Good to hear from you, Ben.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And onward. Let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Well, yesterday and Sunday, we got our first tar balls on Panama City Beach.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, they're real God bless thrill with that.
But you've got an interesting announcement out from your Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission today.
Oh?
Yeah. They are encouraging people to continue fishing.
Oh, yeah. In the open areas.
All Florida residents and visitors are invited to fish statewide for saltwater species without a license during the upcoming Father's Day weekend, that being this past.
Right.
The visible oil slick has spread to within 1 mile of the Panama City coast.
Correct.
Still, Florida has not put its waters off limits to fishing.
No. You can't do commercial fishing, but you're still allowed to fish off the pier.
Well, you know, think of them as pre-greased for easy frying.
You have, you know, I'm just waiting because people don't really understand what's going on here, and it's hard to beat it into their heads that we're going to end up with instead of a Gulf of Mexico, it's going to be the anoxic, toxic pool of Mexico. I mean, we're really looking at the whole blazing to crash.
It's hard to avoid that conclusion. I want to think otherwise, or I want to believe otherwise, but it's hard for me to think otherwise. There, I've got my things all squared up.
There you go.
But you know, and for that matter, you know, why spend 22 pages today, U.S. District Judge for the Eastern District of Louisiana, Martin Leach Cross Feldman, why spend 22 pages writing when he could have just issued a one page with his signature on it saying, drill, baby, drill?
I mean, that's what it is, really.
It's
sheer insanity.
I like Susan's idea. Let's at least plant the seed in their heads, you know, Conyers' office, Maxine Waters' office, Sheila Jackson Lee, Anthony Weiner. Let's at least see if we can get somebody to stand up in the well of the House and say, I've got a bill of impeachment here against Judge Marty Feldman, and I'm introducing it in the Judiciary Committee tomorrow. Because, I mean, didn't he create the appearance of impropriety?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, how can you not recuse yourself in a situation like that under those circumstances? It's just, it's unthinkable. He so visibly, so obviously has a conflict of interest. There's no way that he should have sat in judgment on that case.
But he did.
Yeah, but it's like that judge what's his name, from Massey bought.
Brent Benjamin?
Yeah.
Yeah, he knew better, but of course he still sat in decision on the case until he was called down by the Supreme Court of the United States.
Exactly, and is this any different? Is this in any way materially different in that case?
Well, to my way of thinking, Cossack, it's materially different because this clown in Louisiana never ran for office. He was approved by the Senate, and, you know, a U.S. District Judge, an Article III constitutional judge, is a different animal than a politically elected one.
True.
And so you don't have the obvious tit-for-tat quid pro quo going on that was more than apparent in the case of Brent Benjamin or in the case of the photographs of the other Supreme Court judge, Spike Maynard, out whining and dining and swanning about the French Riviera with Don Blankenship in person.
Mm-hmm.
I love the explanation that was given later, by the way. Well, I think I bought one dinner and he bought the other. That's the living embodiment of quid pro quo. You buy one, I'll buy the other.
Yeah.
This for that.
I bought him a Big Mac, and he bought me a five-course dinner at Le Chez Maison, you know?
Right.
That doesn't really compute, you know?
Not hard to sort out at all.
No. I mean, it's obvious on the face of it. freaking ridiculous.
It's coming to me now, Cossack. Isn't there an ancient legal maxim at work here? Isn't that a case of res ipsa loquitur? The thing speaks for itself?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, jeez, I cannot believe these people. And, well, yes, I can. And the problem of it is, I think that we all keep missing the point. And the point is that, and it should be blatantly obvious to everybody, capitalism has proven itself a failure, mainly because capitalism hinges upon eternal growth. And there is no eternal growth within a closed system. There are limits to everything. And capitalism ignores those limits. And you can't. Now we are of nature constricted to the material that's out there, that's extant. We can't conjure up another earth and start abusing it. And capitalism denies that. It says, no, you must grow eternally. Well, we have things that grow out of control, and they're called cancers.
Exactly.
They're malignant. I mean, am I making sense, or?
No, you are. You are. You make an abundance of it.
You know, it's so insane that people can't see that. We got brainwashed so thoroughly as a nation following World War II that we can't seem to see that, you know, capitalism, and especially laissez-faire capitalism, is a concept whose day has come and gone. Definitely gone. I mean, it's time that the people realize that we've got to stand up, guys. They're coming for us.
And this is a blatant example of that.
Exactly.
Because again, and not to repeat myself over much, but this is a ruling not for the plaintiffs, but against every single citizen in the United States and in favor of the money.
Exactly.
I have yet to see an example where my three M's theory of the state of law and of law and the judiciary in this country has not been proven true. When Bernie Madoff goes to jail for 80 years, and you know Don Blankenship remains a free man, I think I'm proven. And you know what? Texas Betsy sent me a story last night. The sentencing, I think it was due to go down today. The sentencing for Shalom Rubashkin. You remember him? Remember Postville, Iowa, and the kosher meats processing plant that was using child labor? It was a union buster. They were using undocumented immigrants, all of that. Well, it looks like he may be getting something like 27 years.
Ouch.
But he's not getting 27 years for using and abusing undocumented immigrants who had no bargaining power. He's getting 27 years because he abused the money.
Exactly. The workers are cheap. The money? No. That's untouchable. What was it that Pullman said when he was evicting people because they couldn't afford to live in the housing that he built for them? That my 6% profit is sacrosanct. I don't care if I have to cut your wages in half.
There you go. And
hello, people.
And Maura is reminding me via email. She says Scalia set the precedent. She says, don't forget how Scalia went hunting with Dick Cheney and then sat on the case involving release of the energy meeting information to the press. He didn't recuse himself from the case because he said he could be totally unbiased.
No. Come on. I mean, yeah, I'm sure you're going to be totally unbiased when it comes to a friend of yours.
And even more so, yeah, just as we can say with Judge Martin Leechcross Feldman, that, yeah, he was totally unbiased, too, with regard to the parties, but he had a profound bias in favor of his stock portfolio.
Absolutely. Well, that comes first, above all else. As you say, it's the money.
It's not hard to figure out after a while.
It's just painful.
Don't forget ugly.
Yeah.
Well, good to hear from you, Cossack. I know you are near to. Can you smell the stuff yet?
Yeah.
Because that part of it's not good for you either.
No. The volatiles are not good for you. I don't know. It really disheartens me. You know, when I originally came down to this area, I came from around the Chesapeake Bay area, and I'd already seen what had happened there, and you know how badly the Chesapeake Bay is fouled.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, they've lost, you know, entire regions of the bay, which I remember as a kid going down there and crabbing and so forth. Not no more. You know.
Oh no, not in a long time. And we're just running. You know what? The bottom line is, we're running out of places, Cossack. We're running out of places for them to poison.
Well, when you hike the Appalachian Trail, it's if you try and let me see how I can put this diplomatically. If you have an urgent need along the way, it's difficult to find a place that hasn't already been used. What does this tell you?
Yeah, nobody's doing their due diligence digging.
Even if they do, I mean that's the whole point. You're just, you know, there's too much humanity, folks. There really is.
Yeah, as David in Tennessee is reminding me, he says, one can turn the eyes away, but one must breathe now and then. Now then, you see, the air off the Isle of Wight, it's fresh and it's salty and simply a delight. Another sherry, old boy. Oh, boy, bring me a sherry. Yep, that's our reality.
My dear.
All right, well, good to hear from you, Cossack.
Yeah, Buzz, good to hear from you. Take care.
And you as well. How you feeling? Are you getting better?
Sorta.
Well,
in some places worse than others, it seems. They're really picking me apart. This is getting to be ridiculous.
Well, you're beginning to feel like Martin Balsam in Little Big Man?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting me a little.
There's not going to be much of me left.
Exactly. You take care, Cossack. Hang in there, brother.
All right. Take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling live from the Florida Panhandle coastline area. He will be a vital resource for the reality of what's going on down there. As opposed to the stuff that the for-profit media is putting out and pimping as reality. About 23 minutes before the hour, and just as a bit of a follow-up to some of what we were talking about, the business with Shalom Rubashkin, you remember this story, right? The one where the undocumented aliens were herded into the cattle grounds of the Iowa State Fair, you know, stockyards. Yeah. Nice, huh? Well, as it turns out, and anytime there's a anytime that there's a federal sentencing, a lot of the discretion of the federal judiciary has been taken away from federal judges. Only on criminal sentencing, though, because Congress wanted to make sure we were tough on crime. They still got lots of discretion to do what's necessary to protect the money. A federal judge in Iowa has issued a 52-page memorandum deciding that the appropriate sentence for agri-processor Shalom Rubishkin is 27 years. The prosecutors had asked for 25. The defense had asked for 6. He's 51 years old. He had no prior convictions. This guy was shameless. He trotted out his autistic son as a reason to be kept out of prison. And then, barring that, the federal judge also, Shalom Rubishkin also trotted out. We're talking about upward and downward departures and upward and downward variances. Those are terms of art in federal criminal sentencing. And the defendant, Shalom Rubishkin's counsel, argued that the defendant did not commit the offensive conduct for personal gain or out of a sense of greed, but rather in order to continue what he viewed as the critical Lubavitch mission of providing kosher food to the Jewish community. You know, that's the old I stole, but I stole for you defense. Three, defendant's charitable and civic activities are truly extraordinary. Defendant has a special relationship with his developmentally disabled minor son. Defendant suffers from depression that affected him during the period of the offense conduct, impaired his judgment and attention, and combined with his upbringing and religion to make it almost impossible for him to oppose his father and leave the business. Now, these were very well-moneyed people. But you see, they messed with the money. He engaged in fraudulent conduct with regard to the money. The judge said, no matter defendant's motive, he defrauded the victim banks. Wasn't it yesterday that we heard Joe Lieberman opining from one of the Sunday television shows, and when he started talking about the need for the president to have a kill switch for the internet, wasn't the first thing he mentioned the banks? Well, the same thing went down in Iowa in federal court. He defrauded the victim banks out of millions of dollars, unlawfully placed his family business's interest above the victim bank's interest. Notice the use of victim and bank in the same sentence. His family business and he personally benefit at the expense of all the victim bank's innocent shareholders. See, I don't believe there's any such thing as an innocent shareholder, do you? And maybe this is an attenuated stream of responsibility, but let's say you go to some online brokerage site. And you buy shares in, I don't know, Amalgamated Deathcopter. Well, when you see that you're buying shares, and I don't care if it's rocketing skyward and doing a 25-30% return every year, you're still buying shares in Amalgamated Deathcopter. International machine gun widget. And you cannot buy those shares without having a functioning understanding at a very visceral level of what you are buying into. You are buying death. You know, it's sort of like the conundrum that the Environmental Defense Fund has. Now, they are supposedly working hard on issues relating to the Gulf oil disaster. But you know what? One of their board members one of their board members is a hedge fund manager billionaire who's deeply invested in Massey Energy. And he's not there because he wants to be able to have a say-so on the ethical direction that Massey is taking in. No, he's there because until recently, Massey Energy has been a massive profit vehicle. And yet he can go to meetings of the board of directors of the Environmental Defense Fund, and he has a clean conscience? And the Environmental Defense Fund has a clear conscience about having him on its board? Excuse me? And let's say you buy into his hedge fund, because you got hedge fund money. Let's say you buy into it, and you know that he's deeply invested in Massey Energy. Well, at that point in time, you're deeply invested in Massey Energy, aren't you? And by definition, you're deeply invested in 29 dead miners. And 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste hovering over a little mountain community that can't get out of the way when the dirt and rock dam holding it back blows out, or the mountain itself collapses under the weight of the 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste, and no one can get away. But you're invested in it, and you feel that, well, you know, I'm just an innocent shareholder. No, the hell you are! There's nothing innocent about it. When Union Carbide killed in the thousands at Bhopal, India, there were no innocent Union Carbide shareholders. When Chiquita Banana hired gun thugs at the direction of its board of directors and its CEO and the officers of its corporation, when they sent hired guns into the palm frond thatched huts of people who had dared to say we'd like to be paid a little more and worked a little less, when they sent the gun thugs in and put a bullet behind the ear of the so-called labor organizers. And you've got Chiquita Banana in your portfolio, you're not an innocent shareholder. This concept of attenuation between consumer conduct and ethical conduct has got to end in this country, or we are forever screwed. Because we will screw each other into the dirt. Scraping and scrabbling and grabbling and gripping and griping and for another million here, another million there. And so when the judge says in the Shalom Rubashkin case, his family business and he personally benefited at the expense of all the victim banks' innocent shareholders, I call BS. Don't trot out innocent shareholders as a reason for punishing Shalom Rubashkin. Shalom Rubashkin's actions were not nearly as egregious with regard to banks as they were with regard to human beings. But looky, the American judicial system is on display. And it has stepped in to hand 27 much-deserved years behind bars to Shalom Rubashkin. But he doesn't deserve the 27 years because of victim banks. I'd love to see a list of the victim banks and then send an independent forensic accountant auditor into the victim banks and find out how many victim homeowners the victim banks screwed that just in the last year. What do you want to guess the names of the victim banks are? Citi, Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase, you know, Louie, round up the usual suspects. Because that's how it always is. But having pled his good works, the judge wasn't having any of that either from Shalom Rubashkin. She wrote, additionally, it is entirely possible that a number of defendants' charitable deeds were funded with proceeds from his crimes. It is far easier to be generous with someone else's money instead of one's own. But the crimes, again, the crimes are crimes against the money and not crimes against humanity. And when you are working people hour after hour, day after day, at substandard wages, and are participating in an active fraud to have them in this country, and you know me, I have profound sympathy for undocumented immigrant laborers in this country. They are a big part of why this country is still doing much of what this country is doing, whether it be swabbing toilets, or working in meat packing houses, or mowing lawns, or standing in line at the Home Depot and the Lowe's every morning waiting for some $7 an hour job. They're jobs that are getting done. I hold them nigh blameless in this situation. The judge ordered $18 million in restitution. Hint. None of the undocumented workers are getting a damn dime of it. They're going to the victim banks. And he's going to do it. No, it's not Bernie Madoff time, but it's time and substantial time. And he's not doing it. And this is the sick part. This is the part that makes your stomach turn and flip-flop and feel all queasy and dizzy and nasty about the world you live in. He's not doing time for what he did to living, breathing, broken-hearted, broken-souled, broken-bodied human beings. He's going to do time for what he did to something that's not even alive. He's going to do time for something that he did to a concept, an idea. He's going to do time for what he did to the money. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so I like how Hillary comes out in that article.
She's the one McChrystal likes.
Once again, Hillary is just popping up in the most unlikely places, you know. It's like, watch your back, Obama. I don't mean to be cavalier, but I mean, you know what? Wow. You know, they couldn't pay me for that job of president. No more. It's just one disaster after another. And he really needs to, hey, let's go Truman. Can we hope? That bitch need to be fired, just on GP. That article is off the hook.
I couldn't believe... that's why I go back to what I said earlier, Sandra. Why would a general let this thing be written? It's Rolling Stone. Did he not tell him it was Rolling Stone?
Well, no, exactly, which, you know, makes me call into question the whole thing is very suspect, because at one end, you're talking about the whole makeup of his inner circle and how much they basically love him. It's like fanatics from the way I'm reading it. At the same time, it's in print. Something's not gelling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And some of the comments, you know, I mean, the articles, whatever, but the thing, you know, about Holbrook, I'm sorry, it's true. He's a freak. I had to laugh.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean,
some of the comments were just...
There's aspects of the article where you're going, well, you know, this guy's over the line. He doesn't understand the process. But, you know, the commentary that's being offered on some of the folks, no, I mean, Holbrook just comes in and grabs a lever.
Well, no, like a wounded animal trying to hold on. The thing is, he's so destructive, Holbrook. I remember him in the Clinton administration. He was a nightmare. He's one of them cruise missile liberals I was going on about.
Yep.
He's horrible.
Didn't he have a hand in some of the more explosive excesses of the war against the former Yugoslavia?
Yeah. No, he was all over that, along with that horrible Tony Lake. Awful, awful sort of international relations dweebs. And that's why I was surprised when Holbrook popped up again. He's panicky. He's hella panicky. And it's like, I don't mean to focus on that, but I just thought those comments were hella funny. It's like, wow, you know. All the stuff I read about Holbrook, you know, it's just, when I read this, I'm like, yeah, he's a dud. But Hillary, though, you know, what's happening? She'll be 69 in 2016.
Yeah, that's a little too old.
No, same age as Reagan. Hello.
But are we going to do that again?
I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, it's like, I don't know if we are or not. I don't even know if there'll be any kind of U.S. system that's going to be ready for that kind of election anymore. I mean, the way things are going, I don't know what's going to be, what kind of system we're going to have. But can we fit Obama with the cardigan if he don't fire this fool?
No
disrespect to Carter, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I know. And that's it. Who should, you know, and see, you're thinking 2016. I'm thinking when I read the Hillary stuff in the Rolling Stone article, Sandra, I'm thinking Hillary in 12.
Well, I guess. I don't really know. I've already heard rumblings about, why don't they get rid of Biden and they replace Biden with Hillary? That's another meme that's out there.
Well, how old's Biden in 16?
Well, he ain't gonna run. You know, he's not even viable, but I mean, he could be bumped to Secretary of State. He can run that. He knows foreign policy and just do a little switcheroo. Can we put that out there?
Oddly enough, I had a lot of the same sort of thoughts as I was reading the article.
The article is killing me though, because that dude sounds just like a jerk taking his wife to Jack in a Box in formal wear. That's charming.
Well, and you know what? It shows, you know, not that he's a tough, rough and tough. No, it shows that he is socially inept.
Yeah, very inept.
All of that business about, well, I don't want to go to anywhere that's got candlesticks on the table because it's too Gucci.
Oh, no. And he had to speak at the Ecole Militaire. I can just see him doing it now. You know, the hated French.
Yeah, listen, you surrender monkeys.
It's so gay. That's one of his.
Yeah, that was, yeah, I don't want to do it because it's so gay.
Anyway, the thing is, though.
Back up just a minute, because I don't want to run away from this too quickly. What we're talking about here, and I want to reiterate it, is a guy who is socially inept, and it says something about, you know, because he was the last graduating class before they admitted women to West Point, and he was, then they talk about in the article, you know, what a bunch of brawlers they were, and, you know, what a troublemaker he was. He had 100 demerits. He was a century man, so-called, blah, 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 blah. Well, once upon a time, this country used to have the concept of, because we've all seen the movie and heard the tiresome Joe Cocker song, an officer and a gentleman. Well, this guy, because supposedly the academies would teach not only how to run a war, but how to behave like an officer, so that you could, you know, because that's the thing. At the same time that war is a bloody, nasty, filthy, ugly business, at the same time you want your officer corps to exude confidence and dignitas.
Right.
And somewhere along the way, I guess that teaching went out the window, because there's stories in there of how they'd have food fights in the mess hall and blah, 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 blah at West Point. Really? You know, I thought that only happened at Animal House.
Oh, I know. And it's sort of, you know, they kept reminding us over and over again how brilliant he is. But I'm thinking, if he's that damn brilliant, why is he running his mouth off nonstop? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean,
and it's like, you know, what's that about? And the sort of, you know, the Pat Tillman stuff, all that is just despicable. To me, it just shows the overarching power of the military. He should have been fired. The Pat Tillman stuff was despicable.
It is, and yet it was all seemingly forgotten when it was time to put McChrystal in charge of Afghanistan. And this idea that they are Coindonistas, you know, because they're going to have a counterinsurgency,
well,
as if they invented the term.
Yeah, no, but don't you think what's even more disturbing is just the 3 months that Obama pretended to do whatever, but he didn't have any clue about these people, didn't know McChrystal from a can of paint. You know, fired the other general, which I didn't realize was like the first time in 50 years or something. And then he just brings on this McChrystal on the word of who, you know? And I just, you know, I'm thinking, is he really a captive of the military? I'm sorry, that's what these articles make me think about Obama.
Well, it's hard to avoid that conclusion, Sandra, especially because, again, I guess the theme tonight is how the money runs things. But, you know, when they compared, for instance, the Defense Department $600 billion budget,
right,
to the State Department's $50 billion budget, and who's supposed to be in charge of the rebuild? Because, you know, you can't shoot your way to peace. Sooner.
It's supposed to be the State Department, but that shifted, I think, totally to the Pentagon.
But for all the vaunted education and everything, and I know maybe I make myself come across as a simpleton, Sandra, but is nobody out there reading history? Nobody at all? I mean, it's Afghanistan. It's books after books have been written. It's the Hindu Kush. It's the Khyber Pass. It's been tormenting military geniuses for 3,000 years, if not 5. And this military academy genius from the bottom of his class thinks he's the smart guy?
Careful not to get any of that email on your leg. Har, 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 har.
Oh, God, no. I mean, all of it was just, it was such a nauseating read.
I was waiting for the part in the article where he tells one of his aides to get him a glass of rainwater and grain alcohol.
Yeah, no, it definitely, all these people are like rolling like that, you know? It's almost making me sorry that I saw Dr. Strangelove, because he looked like that dude, you know.
He does!
He looks just like that. Freak! All we need is Peter Sellers to pop up. Maybe that's Engel, whatever his name is, that ambassador.
God.
But, I don't, you know, but the thing is, you know, and I hate to be sitting, you know, having bets on whether or not he's going to dismiss them. And you know what? I would be really surprised if he did. Isn't that sad to say?
It is sad. And the fact of the matter is, if you engage in the calculus required, no, he will quietly accept his resignation, but he will not fire him.
Well, no. I have a feeling that, you know, he may just chastise him, just calling back, and the next thing you know, he's still in charge because of, wait for it, continuity.
Oh, it's the Gates factor.
Right, which is hell on earth, and I'm so sick of, I can't tell you how sick of Bob Gates. I mean, why is he still there?
Well, what good is continuity when the continuity involved is failing?
Well, no, I mean, the situation, that's why that whole $1 trillion story is so laughable. It's like, come on now. You know, your shit is just going down the tubes, and you have to take the rest of the country with you. You know, but there's no way he can cut and run because of what the political calculus is, and how he would just, I guess he would just lose the election in 2012 if he got out. Is that where we're at now?
Apparently so. I mean, I was having an email exchange with one of our podcast listening buddies, who says, you know, he still maintains hope that we're out of there in July 2011.
Well, no. You already heard the the groundwork being laid by, you know, General Petraeus. You know, they already hedging that. So that's a joke. I don't believe that's happening.
If you want to do, and the thing the Rolling Stone article did, and again, it's a Rolling Stone article, for God's sakes. Not barking at you, but again, not to say that they don't do journalism, but or good journalism, because they do. But this thing showing up there is baffling to me. You know, from the standpoint of somebody who observes media and how media work, this is baffling to me. But you know, snuggled away inside that is the little nugget of, you know, all the coin people, the counterinsurgency people, acknowledge that it takes that to make that theory work. You've got to have a massive infusion of personnel, and you've got to have a general with, you know, just the right countenance and just the right temperament and personality. And it takes decades. It takes decades. And again, nobody's reading the history books. Alexander set up his Iskandar province in, what was it, 400, 300 B.C., whatever, and eventually marched back and, you know, died in Babylon or wherever. And they soldiered on and held the outpost against the hordes, but they never succeeded in any nation building. They succeeded in getting some blue-eyed stock into the gene pool, and some red hair here and there, but not much else.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, but it's just obviously the whole plan in Afghanistan is really not going that well. Hence, the nerve of Congress to even remotely, timidly suggest that they may not cough up that $33 billion. You should have seen Gates's face at, you know, telling Congress they better cough it up, or, you know, soldiers will be in danger. I mean, it must be bad if this Congress is even hesitating, which is what they are. But
that's all they're doing, Sandra. Let's be clear.
They're gonna cave again. That's what they always do.
Well, sure. And this is the and then they cave and they write the check.
Right, but are they trying to attach? Aren't they trying to attach all the unemployment business onto it too? Isn't that the latest?
I think I read yes.
I mean, it's so sick. That's what I mean. I said this before. That's where we're at, where we have to link everything to a military expenditure in order for it to pass now.
Well, right, because the Democrats have said there will be no full-on budget this year, which means that they're going to do everything by continuing resolution. And if that's the case, then we're into a real mess, because they don't want to do a full-on budget because, frankly, working with the Republicans is just, you know, the work's too hard.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just so dysfunctional. It's incredible. But, and that judge, is it in Texas where he...
No, Louisiana.
Louisiana Junction. I mean, come on. Give me a break. And what, the White House is appealing it or something?
Well, yeah, they're appealing it, but come on, it's going up again. Again, you know, this is just a little judicial reality check. They're appealing it, but they're appealing it to the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Which is more of the same?
Worse. An appeal went to them a few months ago, and the entire U.S., there were so many judges. I want to get this right. There were so many judges who had to recuse themselves that they couldn't pull together an appellate panel to hear it, because they all had so many conflicts of interest because of their energy stocks in their portfolios.
And this is the Fifth Circuit? Is this the
one
in Atlanta?
This is the Fifth. No, I think it sits at no. The Fifth Circuit got split, and I think it's the 11th in Atlanta and the 5th in New Orleans.
Oh, okay, yeah, the 11th. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, like you were saying, the Republicans, when the Democrats control whatever, they get all the appointments in place, you know, yes sir. And with Obama or Clinton, they just languish. So the courts are packed with these crony corporatist.
And make no mistake that the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is known as being just an absolute filthy haven of right-wingers, Sandra.
Mm.
I mean, there's no liberals there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look where they're being appointed from. They're being appointed from Louisiana, from Mississippi, you know, Arkansas, et cetera.
Well, the thing that, you know.
So my question is, what's going to happen when the Obama administration DOJ appeals to the Fifth Circuit?
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, I guess they'll probably uphold the injunction.
Right, and then it goes from there to where? Well, it goes to the Supreme Court of the United States.
But let me ask you something, though. I'm sorry, but the oil is still gushing, right? I mean...
Yes, you are correct.
How do they reconcile? They're okay with the total destruction of that area of the country because, what, they have housing and they get their shrimp from other places? I mean, I'm trying to understand. You don't shit where you live. You know what I'm saying?
No, you don't. But the thing...
Why are they doing that? That's just
But the problem is, no, supposedly, you know, the supposed plaintiffs, and I have to use that term very, very carefully, the supposed plaintiffs, Sandra, in this case, were people who were in the well servicing or drilling servicing business.
Well, Halliburton?
Well, I don't know that it was Halliburton per se. I don't have the full the full styling of the case, but it was people who ferry stuff out, and you know, I don't know, maybe they do the drill bits or maybe they do the piping or whatever. But that's who brought this case. It wasn't a bunch of shrimpers.
No. Okay. Well, no, I understand. So it's people who are in the industry, obviously. And they want to be able to keep...
It was brought of the industry, by the industry, and for the industry.
Right. So, but I thought that they put the moratorium on there under the idea that they want to, what, make sure everything is safe first or find a reason why it happened or whatever.
Right, right.
Just sort of a normal, and it's only for 6 months, right?
Right.
But, of course, because they didn't seize assets or do whatever... They can't guarantee these people's incomes, can they?
Well, to a certain extent, some of that, it's my understanding that some of that $20 billion is supposed to be that.
Okay, well, see, then I don't
But then it's only $5 billion a year.
Well, no, but that $20 billion is, I mean, I'm not saying it's a joke, but that's just more smoke and mirrors because there's no way that the $20 billion is even a tip of what is actually...
No, it is wholly insufficient.
Because if you're, say, if yours is a basic one-man operation, you make, say, $50,000 a year. If your environment or your workplace is destroyed for, say, conservatively 20 years, are they going to give you $50,000 a year for 20 years?
And see, that's where the trouble comes in.
Okay.
You know, right. Meanwhile, I don't know if you saw this highly disturbing statistic. But it turns out that the piping on the well, the bad one, the one that's ruining the Gulf, this is one of those visceral little moments where you can get in touch with the actual meaning of things. It is tilting the riser down there, the riser package, so-called, is tilting at 10 or 12 degrees off plumb or off perpendicular. Okay. To get your head around that, understand that the Leaning Tower of Pisa is tilted at 5.5 degrees.
Well, okay, no, I understand what you're saying, but I'm having a hard time visualizing. So the piping is inserted down through the seabed, right?
Yeah, but what is sticking up is tilting because it's a massive multi-ton affair that was, you know, brought the piping comes up out of the seabed through the riser, through the blowout preventer, and up to the platform.
Okay, so it's tilting, and what is that, 410? Please tell.
Well, Marvin Odom is the president of Shell Oil, and he was speaking to the Houston Chronicle last week, and he said, the integrity of the well casing is a major concern. And then engineers and geologists have said that the whole damn thing could tip over if the integrity of the if the integrity of it is further degraded. leading to what they call unlikely but not implausible situation of oil gushing through the seafloor.
Okay, but the thing is, though...
And I guess that's another one of those doomgasms we were talking about the other night.
What is holding the piping in place right now, and why would it degrade further?
Why would it degrade further if wow, I'm out of my depth on this. No pun intended.
Yeah, that's fine, but is it because of the pressure that's involved?
Well, it's because of everything. It's because of pressure involved. It's because of what has or may be about to happen to the piping that is underneath the seabed floor and what's happening to it there. This whole, you know, the whole thing is going to hell. And, you know, if there's a, I'm trying to visualize it myself, but if the thing blows out below the seafloor any further, if that gives way and the seafloor goes, then the whole thing goes and gush.
Okay, so then that would just be like that would literally be the hole in the earth and just the gushing from the reserve.
Right, and at that point you're praying for the relief well to work. And that's really all you've got is prayer, because it's certainly not engineering.
Okay, so they think that they don't have any timeline for this? Is it just a race against time now with these relief wells?
Well, that's what they'd like to characterize it as, but the fact of the matter is, I guess the simplest way, you know, see dick drill for oil, see oil platform fail, you know, first grade oil drilling engineering, which is about as much as I'm capable of, if not kindergarten, is to say that, you know, the whole damn thing is about to do something even worse than it's doing right now. In other words, that there could be a gash in the ocean floor, and there's nothing to work with at that point.
Okay, no, listen, I'm about as bad as you when it comes to this sort of stuff, so, yeah, it's definitely working in the dark, but I do, common sense, I understand what you're saying, and, you know, I can't really wrap my head around it. Wow.
Yeah, and it's in many ways I don't want to wrap my head around it.
Yeah,
I don't like these science fiction nightmare scenarios of holes in the earth and people dropping nuclear weapons and volcanoes, and you know that shit gave me nightmares when I was 8.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I remember when we used to have to run down in the imaginary nuclear shelter at my high school.
We had those little black and yellow. Triangles in circles, civil defense signs all over every school I went to.
Right.
And when you went to the places you were supposed to gather for civil defense, and you look, you know, even an 8-year-old looking around goes, we're screwed.
Well, yeah, no, I used to see them signs. You know, yeah, but anyway. Well, so that's, wow, that's pretty bad news.
It's not helpful.
Oh my God! Well,
but again, you know, let's put this in the larger context, the bigger picture. That's all okay with Martin Cross Leach Friedman.
Right. Yeah.
Feldman. Because he says, you know, well, just because it happened, because this is the core of his ruling. Just because it happened over there doesn't mean it's going to happen over here. And that the Obama administration in this, and let's understand, this is a tepid response in the first place. This is not the robust response that was desperately needed. The response is tepid. It's just a partial moratorium for a short period of time. That to even do that is too much of a threat to the money. Because the money would rather drill baby drill, spill baby spill, and kill baby kill than be interfered with.
Yeah, no. It's incredible. But there is no reason or rhyme for that. I'm sorry for that part of the country. It just seems really out of control. But I do feel for just the people who live there. I mean,
sure. How can you not?
The Cossack, and you were asking him if he can smell it. I'm like, oh, dear God, is this what's going on? Is that everyone down there, millions upon millions of people, are now just smelling this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, they've been smelling it. I've had emails from Kate out in Arizona, who's in touch with her people along the Gulf Coast, and they've been smelling it for weeks.
Yeah, well, that can't be good.
No, it's toxic as hell.
You know what I mean?
And see, at the I guess if you want to do the deep level analysis, again, and I noticed this because I'm so damned familiar with it, and I wish I wasn't, Sandra, but I'm used to the con of jobs, 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 jobs. You know, we can't stop mountaintop removal here in West Virginia because of the jobs, 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 jobs.
Right.
No matter how toxic they are. And this is the curse of a mono economy. You know, you had an economy based on fishing, shrimping, oystering, that kind of stuff, and it was viable and it provided a living to people. But lo and behold, the fossil fuel industry, whether it be coal up here or oil down there, gets involved, and it's no different than the heroin dealer on the school corner going, "Hey kid, the first one's free." Because once you've had the first one, then you feel like, well, gosh, we've got to have it now because some people are working for them.
No, that's incredible. But listen, did you look at that short article I sent you about the health insurance?
Yeah, I did.
Well, the thing about that is, like, I mean, isn't that just about right? Now, the president is reduced to what? Begging. Basically.
Yeah, please. You mean please don't raise the health insurance rates?
Well, yeah, some sort of warning, and it's just like
stop, or I'll say stop again.
Yeah, you know, it's too much because there is no cost control to this madness that he's unleashed. And now what? They're going to say, yeah, sure, we won't raise. Oh, come on. Anyway, I just so that one. Was
yeah, this this thing from Reuters headlined: Obama warns health insurers not to hike rates. Administration releases rules for consumer protections.
Get enough money from this polluter. I mean, how is he going to stop?
Well, no, not even that. And see, and again, and I don't mean to hold you on longer than you want to be, but there are incredibly deep issues that are raised with all of this stuff. So President Obama has warned U.S. insurance firms on Tuesday not to use his health care overhaul as an opportunity to push through big rate increases, and said the federal government would work with states to monitor them. Blah, 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 blah. Well, all it takes is one Reagan appointee U.S. district judge, and suddenly Barack Obama no longer has the power to make warnings like that. See, there was something in that I saw yesterday referring to the Minnesota Republican gubernatorial candidate, a little creep named Tom Emmer, who's still making this tenther argument that the states have the right to overturn federal laws that they don't like.
Right.
It's called nullification. And it goes all the way back to when John C. Calhoun of South Carolina was vice president of the United States. I mean, like, goes back to 1830-something, 1833. And at that point, in 1833, South Carolina raised an army of 25,000 men to go and fight the federal government. And that's when, you know, that's when some real nastiness began to transpire. And then a little bit later, they actually did manage to start up a full-on, no kidding, war that cost us, you know, a few hundred thousand people. Also being pointed out in this article I'm looking at, When Brown versus Board of Education came down, every Southern member of Congress signed a petition signed something called the Southern Manifesto that said the states were not bound by the Supreme Court decision in Brown versus Board of Education. Well, see, what we're dealing with here, in the Judge Feldman's case is another issue of nullification. He is saying that the federal government does not have the right to do the rulemaking and do the emergency work that the federal government is specifically empowered to do. This stuff has roots that go way ugly, nasty, deep into the history of the American people, Sandra. And where it takes us is somewhere we've been before and we damn sure don't want to go again.
Oh, no, for sure. Just the sort of ugliness that's on the horizon when you talk about that kind of stuff. Yeah, no, it's definitely disturbing.
It's hateful. It's scary. It's the stuff that, you know, people start shooting guns over.
Yeah, you know, there's a group of people desperate to bring up. Yeah, I don't even want to go there. Yeah, I don't. Ugh, all of it is just sort of disturbing. But anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
Well, thanks for everything. I enjoyed the conversation. Take care, Sandra.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Onward we go. Well, before that, let's see, a little clarification here. Another Bob writing in, Bob in Nevada, says, from everything I've read, not only are we dealing with the pressures involved, but the well is ejecting sand and rocks, essentially turning the flow into a giant sandblaster that's eroding the inside of the pipe. It started out 2 inches thick and is now, by estimates, an inch or less in thickness. From a site called theoildrum.com. Thank you, Bob. And with the caveat that I understand the concept of doomgasm that David in Maine brought up a couple of nights ago. This isn't that when we're talking about what Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman did. This isn't doomgasming. This is reality. This is something out of a bad 70s horror movie. You know, the one where they... this is Jaws, okay? This is just Jaws. Where they insist the beach is safe and we can't close the beach because that'll be bad for business. And then people keep getting eaten by the shark. Well, what Judge Martin Leach Cross Feldman has done is in essence to say, well, we've got one shark problem, but that doesn't prove that all sharks are bad. We've got one man-eating shark out there, but it doesn't prove that all man-eating sharks are going to go to that beach. And logically, yeah, okay, I get that. But sometimes there are concepts of fundamental prophylaxis that have to be engaged in order to keep the other shark from coming, just on the odd chance that it might like to eat some human flesh. Yeah, David in Tennessee, you're right. This is Jaws. If Jaws could eat New England and not just a couple of swimmers. God almighty. A little creepy, isn't it? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Jim?
Well, I've just been listening for a little while, and I don't have a whole lot to add. But when you look at the comments made by, who is it, McChrystal?
Yes. Well, and members of his staff. You got to read the article.
And he made the comments about Le Co-Militaire being gay?
I don't like to do that. It's so gay.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I come from that background, too. And I just wonder whatever happened to the expression, duty is the sublimest word in the English language, as far as a military officer is concerned. And that certainly has nothing to do with the performance of his duties as to make comments like that. I mean, this guy is another General Jack Ripper sitting behind his desk at Burleson Air Force Base.
Chomping on that cigar.
Talking about brain alcohol and his precious bodily fluids.
They begin to look that way, don't they? And I don't think it's our fault for having seen the film, Jim.
No, and I can tell you one thing. It's no great comment or compliment to have a military career at a military school when you have sustained 100 demerits and things like that. At least where I came from, that was something to be proud of. And, you know, this guy is just absolutely bonkers. And what they ought to do with his sorry ass is to do what Truman did to MacArthur. And that's to give him his pink slip in retiring or firing and said, you know, go.
But see, there's one difference here. Truman did that to MacArthur, and it cost Truman dearly in terms of his presidential popularity. And he did it at a time when he knew he was not going to run for re-election. And so that made Truman a little bit dangerous and a little bit, dare I say it, bad choice of words, bulletproof.
Well, I think their dispute was over MacArthur's desire to use nuclear weapons against communist China, correct?
Correct.
Well, I can tell you who's the least dangerous of those two. And he took that brass hat and stuck it up his ass and told him exactly what he could do with it. That's what somebody else needs to do.
And see, I can't help wonder if Barack Obama would make a little bit of, pardon me for saying it this way, Jim, but I think you will take my meaning as it is intended and not negative. If Barack Obama would dare to use this for a little bit of theater and make a little bit of theater out of canning this general and doing it publicly and saying, it's not about me, it's about the presidency, and it is about the civil administration of the military.
And its subservience to the civilian chain of command.
Correct. I think it might work in his benefit.
Generals don't provide continuity, Bob. The civilian authorities provide the continuity. And, you know, this is my question. Since when did the military, as I knew it, become involved in nation building?
Well, you know, I'm glad you put that question out there, Jim, because you have a solid knowledge of history. When it came time to rebuild Europe after the Second World War, how did we do that? You know, the Marshall Plan and all of that stuff. How did we do that? How did we administer that re-nation building?
It was done through a civilian, totally civilian administration that had control over any military operations beneath it.
What happens, and this is a different subject, when you get 4 stars on your shoulder boards, what happens to a human being's mind if you can offer some level of speculation? At that point, you know, where we're talking about, like with McChrystal, first of all, he's got a creepy history. He was part of the cover-up of Pat Tillman's death. And that's, you know, that's a black mark. But what happens when you get that 4th star? Does your ego completely pave over everything, you know, your ability, your training, your patriotism, your sense of duty being the sublimest word in the language? Does that all get paved over by ego and you just become some sort of preening peacock?
Well, what happened to that general in the film 7 Days in May, played by Burt Lancaster?
Precisely my question.
That's exactly what happened in many cases. Not all, but in many cases. You've got a loose cannon up there. That's all there is to it. Just a loose cannon.
You know, if you go and you read this Rolling Stone article, you will find an account at one point about how McChrystal had to go to Karzai's residence and wanted his help for something. I forget what the particulars are. But...
Well...
He dialed and dialed and knocked and knocked and well, you know, the president cannot be disturbed. He is abed fighting off the after effects of a cold. Now, first of all, the thing I read that and I thought, that sounds like sleeping it off to me. And secondly, I thought, gee, I wonder if that's where those intimations came from that Karzai himself is some sort of an opiate addict. And third, I found it interesting that they finally McChrystal went and got the help of the Afghan defense minister who finally got Karzai on the phone. Again, it's a scene it's a scene out of Dr. Strangelove where they have to call Ivan at his dacha or however you pronounce it.
Right, I know. Well, you know, bringing MacArthur back up again, it wasn't MacArthur who went to Hirohito. It was Hirohito who went to MacArthur.
Yes, absolutely. The divine imperial presence.
Because MacArthur was the only one who stood between Hirohito and the block. Because there were people who wanted to try him for war crimes because of Hirohito... was just as involved in that thing as Tojo, as far as making war against this country and urging his soldiers on and stuff like that. I mean, so I, I, I don't know.
What would happen? What would happen if does the president have the ability to pull back one of those stars off the shoulder board?
He certainly does. As a matter of fact, he can take them all off there if he wants to. He can strip that man's chest of every bit of fruit salad he's got if he has the balls to do it. That's the thing. We don't have a president that's got any balls.
Have we had one?
Not in a long time, fella.
I would dare hazard the guess that certainly not since Johnson and maybe not since Kennedy.
Well,
because obviously Truman did.
And in the question of nullification with John C. Calhoun, I can tell you when Andrew Jackson told him, he said, "You fuck with me, and I apologize to the."
I understand, but yes.
"And I'll hang you higher than Haman." Those were his exact words.
Higher than Haman was his words?
Yes, sir.
That was about the same time he said he would start riding for South Carolina and fight and hang the first secessionist he found and keep hanging him until he was out as either rope or secessionist?
I wouldn't be surprised. I can't find that quotation. You can, but, I mean, I do know that he told Calhoun, he said, "You fuck with me and keep on with this nullification bit, and I will hang you higher than Haman." That's exactly what he did.
And John C. Calhoun got real quiet real quick, didn't he?
Exactly. Certainly did. I mean, and we wonder why this country is in the shape that it's in. And you've got a judge down there who has loads of Transocean and Halliburton stock, and yet he did not recuse himself in this particular...
How is he not a fitting subject for an impeachment inquiry, Jim? How is he not?
Well, I think he certainly is. But I ask you, who is in charge of the Judiciary Committee in the House?
That is John Conyers.
Republican, correct?
No, Democrat. We've still got a majority there yet.
Okay. Well, I think that the very first thing that people need to do is to contact their congressman and don't talk to any intern. And if they can't get a satisfaction from that congressman's office, to be transferred to the Judiciary Committee. I've done that many a time. Listen, I don't mess around with I'm not trying to pretend like I'm somebody with any great authority, but I do know enough about the system to realize.
You know a little bit about chain of command, Jim.
Yes, I do.
Don't hide your light under a bushel.
And when I do, and I do know this, I don't deal with supernumeraries. If I don't get the right answer that I want, I say, "Thank you, please transfer me to your supervisor. Or if you can't handle this, if nobody's in the office today who can handle my request, then transfer me over to the House Judicial Committee." And they have to do it
because, yeah, the major standing committees have standing offices and standing staff.
Absolutely, they're totally independent of your particular individual representative. So, I mean, don't deal when you call DC and you talk to somebody on the phone. You're going to get some type of intern who's been there for 2 weeks who's looking for another slot where he can go with another three. Okay. You need to talk to a permanent staffer, and if you can't get to someone who is close to that congressman's chief of staff, then you go straight, you ask me to transfer to the Judiciary Committee, and you just tell them you're not going to let go until they satisfy your request, and you will call back. And they will get so tired, and they will realize they're not doing their job, and when you start threatening, and I have done this. I said, "I'd like to know who you work for." "Well, what do you mean by that?" I said, "Who writes your performance appraisal?" When you start asking questions like that, sometimes you can get a little bit further.
Well, there are members of that Judiciary Committee that I would think would at least take our call. Sheila Jackson Lee is on that committee. Anthony Weiner is on that committee. Maxine Waters is on that committee. John Conyers is on that committee. There's a lot of folks there that have some tenure, I guess.
Well, that judge needs to be recalled. That's all there is to it. I mean, obviously, he is allowing his own personal interest to supersede his judicial duties. That's all there is to it. And
you know, and the fact of the matter is, we're not saying he did anything wrong. He created the appearance of impropriety, and that is the standard.
That's all it takes, my friend. You know, it isn't evil. It's the appearance of it that does you in. That's all it takes, period.
And how can there be anything but the appearance of impropriety in this?
Of course there is. And, you know, here's the deal. The oil industry has insinuated itself so well into the economy of that area that I would dare say they have more clout than those people who are being hurt by this oil spill.
Absolutely, and that you know, that's the overarching thing that comes out of this whole miserable matter, whether it be 29 dead miners at Upper Big Branch or 11 dead oil rig workers on the BP Horizon. The oil gusher, and any number of disasters that have befallen this country. What we have here, Jim, is a situation in which this country, you know, I hear the stuff from the religion industry all the time. America has lost its way. Well, you know, that's the thing, Jim. America has lost its way, but it hasn't lost its way for want of some lack of obeisance or knee bending or scraping or kowtowing. What we've lost our way from is this idea that we are a nation that exists for something more than commerce. That there is a grand experiment at work here, Jim, and we've abandoned it because it was cheaper, well, not cheaper, but it was more lucrative just to go and make money. Never mind all the business about when in the course of human events and the securing for our posterity. No, screw all that. We want to make a buck.
Right, you're right. And all these lobbyists up there that I've talked about, all 1,276 of them that get paid almost $1 billion a year. I've said it before. They've got so many of those men that are supposedly elected to represent us in their pockets. I mean, this is worse than Tammany Hall or Al Capone with his judges and his civil service in Chicago during Prohibition.
Right, because we've made it acceptable. In those instances, it was dirty and everybody knew it was dirty. But now it's dirty and we are made to think that it's clean.
Well, see,
we're being handed sow's ears and told that they're silk purses.
Yeah, you're right. And people are just...
I mean, I when I read this thing earlier today about the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals and about the fact that there was a massive lawsuit appealed to the 5th Circuit, okay? I don't have the case name or anything. A little digging around and I might. But it was just last month, you know, May. It was just May when the entire 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals was so dirty in their stock portfolios and so thoroughly conflicted out that this massive piece of litigation against various and sundry energy and chemical companies, they were so dirty that so many members of the 5th Circuit had to recuse themselves that there weren't enough judges on the bench to hear the case.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
You know, that's astonishing. And you know, yes, it's nice that the Obama administration is jumping right on the appeal. And yes, it is noble that the Sierra Club is joining in the appeal. That's great. But it's still going to be heard by another bought and paid for institution of our judiciary. Because a long time ago, the right wing figured out, Jim, that the judiciary was dangerous to them, and the only way to control it was to own it.
Well, that's exactly what they've done. I mean, the appointees to these higher courts, who signed their appointments? And who, you know, initiated them as far as the vetting process is concerned. And who vetted them?
Right. Well, you know, look, this guy's a Reagan appointee.
Okay, but Reagan didn't do it by himself.
No, hell no. It was a cadre of young, eager, idealistic, the conservative, proto-fascist, you know, whatever you want to call them. And they said, oh, he's your boy. And Reagan said, well, where do I sign?
Well, but it's always in my understanding that if you are in a judicial position and you have investments in countries and companies or something like that, that these have to be put in blind portfolios.
They do. They do. They have to be put in a blind trust. But the fact of the matter is that doesn't make you blind to what was in the portfolio when you took the position. And frankly, I simply, because this is based on human nature and not any particular knowledge, Jim, but the fact of the matter is, we're talking about humans and human failings. If you were getting a check every year for X number of thousands of dollars from your investment portfolio, wouldn't you be a little curious as to what you were invested in? You know, and who's doing your investing for you? And are you telling me that if you sit down at the commander's palace in New Orleans over a few oysters Bienville and a couple of cocktails that he won't tell you that your shares of BlackRock Holdings did awesome for you last year? You know, that defies my understanding of human nature.
Well, of course, your point is very well made, and you're right. Absolutely. And, you know, in this particular case, justice is not blind. The blindfold has been removed.
No, I always hearken back, Jim, to Crisco John Ashcroft, who wasn't nearly as concerned with the blindfold as he was the naked breast.
Oh, that fool.
Remember when he spent $10,000 of our money?
I've tried to forget a lot of it.
$10,000 of our money to cover up the aluminum teat.
You know, I want to ask you something. How do you think it makes me feel when I've taken so many oaths so many times to uphold and defend this stuff? It makes me feel like a complete asshole at times.
Well, not in my eyes, Jim. Not in my eyes. You took it seriously and you took it honorably, and you came from a place that preached that stuff and did and took it honorably. And I know that you have people who were honorably dead.
And the trouble is, I still do. I still believe in that oath I swore. I mean, I ask you, what is the swearing of an oath?
If it is not held sacred, it is nothing.
Just like if you hold your hands and, you know, it's just like it was said in A Man for All Seasons. How does one assume the bearing and the responsibility of the taking of an oath? It's like putting your hands together and holding water. Do you keep your fingers together, or do you spread them apart and allow your dignity to fall on the ground?
I fear, Jim, and this is only my feeling, but I fear, Jim,
well, I do too. And
that what you have just expressed would, among that crowd, once you read the article, you understand why I say this. Among that crowd that crowd of sycophants who surrounds General McChrystal, what you just expressed would be deemed antiquated. Or what? How was it that Attorney General Gonzalez described the? When he described the attorney, the Geneva Conventions as quaint.
Oh, I would be described as an anachronism, not keeping with the program.
But you know what? There are people who still held it that way. There was a 44-year-old colonel in Iraq. And I remember covering his story way back in the WWNR days. And he saw the corruption going on around him and wrote a note to his wrote a note to his commanding officer telling him precisely what it was he thought of him, and then exited the planet. And had hell on earth, his family had hell on earth, of course, getting his story out.
I don't know, Bob, there's something that has happened to what I call the nobility of service. And I can remember days when people like McChrystal were given one or two options. One of those options was to go into his desk after he closed the door and pull out a revolver. I better not say anything more. That's all I have to say. I don't have much more to contribute to your program, and I apologize for that.
No worries, Jim. You've contributed more than you know. Thank you very kindly.
You take care and have a good evening.
You too. Bye now, Jim. For people who have been raised on a sense of honor and dignity, things like McChrystal are very hard business. And I mean what I said, things like McChrystal. Because war is dirty and brutal and hateful and nasty. And bloody. And wounding even if you come out unscathed. And the only thing that holds the whole thing together is a sense of honor. And of dignity and obligation. Email coming in, and this is profound in its own right, because it has a backstory that you don't know and is alluded to herein. Maura has just written in with regard to the question of the question I put to Cossack, can you smell the stuff yet? And he said, oh, yeah. And the fact that it's been smelled for a long time along the Gulf Coast, and Kate has alluded to it in her correspondence. Maura writes, I'm very worried about all the folks in the Gulf area that must breathe in that crappy air. As you know, the government told me the air was safe after 9/11. And you know how disabled I have been for years. The best advice I can give the residents of the Gulf, if hopefully they can afford it, is to purchase air purifiers for inside their homes so that they can get at least a little respite and spend as little time outdoor as possible. And above all else, do not believe what the government says about the air quality. Take what Maura says. If you live in that region, take what she says to heart, because it is not offered idly. You've only heard from Maura a few times on this program, though she listens faithfully every night. And I get magnificent correspondence from her. Take what she says to heart. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
Hey, this is Ange.
Hey, Ange, how are you, dear?
It's been hectic here, and I really don't want to talk about my problems, but I had to work late. Usually I work later on Tuesdays, but I ran into a friend of mine that I'm good friends with here in my neighborhood, and she was upset, and she was telling me a story, and I don't know what to do, and maybe you have people that are listening that might know. But, okay, there's this couple that I know, and they're married. They've been married for a little over 10 years, and they are from Hong Kong, China. And she works at the university here, and he's like a math teacher. And he donates his time to the library with his origami studies. I mean, they're like assets. to the community. They're awesome. And ever since I've known them for 5.5 years, you know, he'll go back to Hong Kong for a little while, and because he has property there that he's trying to sell, because the real estate is just like it is here, nothing's selling. And he comes back because he's not a legal citizen. All right, but she is. She has been sent for like 3.5 years. And she just got a job in Maine. They're going to be moving at the end. Oh, she told me a couple weeks ago she's going to be moving at the end of the summer because she got a job in Maine at the university there. And they're over, I mean, you know, they're our age or older. I really never asked them how old they are. But she, when I ran into her today, she was almost in tears, you know. And she said that they weren't letting him come back from Hong Kong.
Oh, dear God.
And, I mean, you know, I had to, you know, I gave her my, you know, it's like I said, I'm going to try to get information for you, but, you know, you need to do it. Because she was telling me it could be 3 to 10 years before you can come back. And I'm like, that doesn't even seem right. I mean, this man is more of an asset here in the United States than most people I know that are born here.
Well, Ange, the short answer, and for all the harping I've been doing on the judicial system this evening, it may sound somewhat hypocritical, but the short answer is she's got to get a lawyer.
Okay, all right.
She has got to get an immigration lawyer. And if not there where you are, then certainly in the state capital, there will be an immigration rights group. And they will have immigration lawyers either on retainer, on staff, or, you know, on standby.
Okay. All right. Because, I told her I really don't know anything about that, but I might know people. You know, I can do some research because I'm not.
Well, it's a legal
thing. But I know everybody on the Head On Radio network, and there are a lot of people that are brilliant at different things.
If anybody emails me with anything beyond that, I will certainly shoot you a note, probably by Facebook or by email, whichever. But the bottom line is, this is a legal problem, and you cannot do any. I don't care what kind of problem it is in this country. If you have a legal problem and do it without a lawyer, you are a babe in the woods and a sheep among wolves. She must get an immigration lawyer. Now, and that means, you know, don't go down the street and go in the first door you see, you know, of the guy who does titles for the bank. You call the state, you know, you start looking around in the state capital and find the immigration. I don't mean in government. But somewhere in the seat of the state government, there will be an immigration rights group, and you contact, and you, she contacts them.
And anything
that she does, this is the important part. I've got to absolutely nail this one to the floor. Anything she does other than that, at this point in time, is counterproductive to any efforts she might make later. This is something that gets done yesterday.
Okay, so the first thing she needs to do is
the only thing she needs to do.
The only thing she needs to do. Okay.
Until she has talked to an immigration lawyer, there's nothing more to do.
It just seems ridiculous that this has happened. I mean, they've been living here for years, and I really don't understand why he's not a citizen, but she has been. I mean, and they speak English, and they understand, and they're like brilliant people. You know,
and you know whether it's a petition in his favor or anything, or a little demonstration or anything that anybody would be inclined to do, it's all the wrong thing to do until there is a lawyer, an absolute honest to Jesus immigration lawyer hired.
Okay, all right, because I told her I was going to get the best advice she could get, and I was going to find out.
That doesn't sound like very good advice, but it's the only advice, because immigration law is Byzantine and convoluted and complicated and every other word I can think of to use that would convey how much you don't want to do it yourself. She has got to get an immigration lawyer, Ange. And please report back and let us know how things go, okay?
Because, I mean, I love these people. I mean, he invented his whole origami thing that he's been teaching at the public library here.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing, you know?
He helps people. I mean, they are beautiful people, and I love them. And it just seems, and I've never seen her upset the 5.5 years I've known her. And she was almost in tears, and I had to hug her and bring her in, and
Yeah, but you know what? That speaks volumes for your quality as a person, Ange. I got to run along, dear, because I'm fresh out of time. Call back when we've got more time.
They can email me at frankandangel.com. They can get my email address.
Okie dokie. Thank you.
All right, I love you guys. Sorry I've been absent, but okay, I'm going to let you go now. Bye.
Understood. See ya. Okay. Bye. And let's try to work one more in here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
I am Bob from Nevada, Chogan and Bob in your chat room.
Oh, okay, great. Good to hear from you. I'm sorry there's so little time.
Hey, and I'm glad that you picked this up at the last. I'm sitting here and I'm reading McChrystal's remarks from Rolling Stone.
Yeah, it's kind of hair-raising, isn't it?
I have two words. Pat Tillman.
Yeah.
This was the guy that covered up Pat Tillman.
Exactly.
It's just an absolute travesty, and I just I get mad every time I think about it.
As do I, as should anyone with a sense of morals or ethics.
And I missed most of the program, and I don't know if you mentioned that or not, but I just thought I'd throw that out.
Actually, well, I did, but I'm glad you reiterated. And Bob, call in again when there's a little more time to chat, so we can get to know you a little better.
I will do so, sir.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Bob from Nevada, also from the chat room. And one more. No. Okay. Slap out of time. If you are so inclined, your help in continuing to solve the rather ugly and pressing problem going on here would be much appreciated. PayPal button or snail mail, either way is great. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen all of the time. John Fox, chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, show host, jack of all trades. Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Ben Birch. Got to hear from Ben this evening. That was nice. He's working like crazy. Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org. There's no liberal talk on the Internet without Ben Birch. And he goes back to 2002. 8 years is a long, long time. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo Cavalcade of Crazy. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, cross-posted to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Now, all of this also happens because of the dedicated participation ongoing of the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about that. I was out gathering up those little coniferous twigs that you beat yourself with while you're in the sauna. That's what I was doing. Yeah. But it's all good now. We've got a balmy 95 degrees. This is our hottest day in the Head On Radio Network sauna thus far. Ah, throw some more water on the hot rocks, Agnes. It's not hot enough in here yet. Woo! Mercy. Nah, the fact of the matter was that it was much more prosaic than that. At the last minute, Bill Gates told me that he wanted to update the production computer here, and therefore, well, you know, what Bill Gates says he wants, Bill Gates by God gets, right? Right. That's usually how that works. So that's where I was. Interestingly, I started the update process at about 5 minutes until the hour. Oh, well, these things happen. But I'm here, you're there. The chat room is beginning to fill up. And I think we've got a pretty interesting evening's discussion ahead of us. Three things, really. First of all, right before airtime, I got to admit I had immersed myself in the much ballyhooed article about General Stanley McChrystal that's gotten him in the deep stuff, apparently, the article from Rolling Stone. And I got to say, it's pretty interesting reading. I have not been paid to endorse the story, nor would I have you believe that I had been. But you can read it by going over to rollingstone.com. It's, I guess it hits the stands 3 days from now, Friday the 25th, but you can read it now. And it paints a rather interesting picture of General McChrystal. And, you know, I asked that question, and I've been asking for years now. I asked the question last night, where is our Alexander the Great? Well, hint, having read the article at Rolling Stone, it ain't Stanley McChrystal. No, Stanley McChrystal is a self-important little martinet who has surrounded himself with hoo-ah hollering toadies, who have no more of an idea about how to, quote-unquote, win in Afghanistan than a hog has about how to tie his shoes over his cloven hooves. No clue. But if you read the article, you'll find that he is surrounded by people who are absolutely dedicated little cultists. And they are a disturbing lot. There's an element in there, well, I don't know. Maybe we'll take a look at it later in the program. What lit me up earlier in the day, though, as I'm sure you probably know or would have guessed, is this article, the articles, numerous of them, hitting the series of tubes all day long or all afternoon long, about federal judge Martin Feldman. He is the U.S. District Court judge for the Eastern District of Louisiana. No, not that Marty Feldman. Igor, help me with the bags. All right, you take the blonde, and I'll take the one with the toy bin. No, I wish we were dealing with a Marty Feldman that quick of wit, that humane, that urbane, that sophisticated. But no, we are dealing with United States District Judge Martin Crossleach Feldman. I wish to hell I was making that big old mouthful of a name up. What ump? Werewolf? There, wolf. There, castle. Would that I were. Would that I were talking about such a man. But no, I'm not. I'm talking, by God, brethren and sistren. Oh, this is Tuesday, not Wednesday. Got to hold off on the brethren and the sistren, then. No, I'm talking about United States District Court Judge Martin Crossleach Feldman. Leach Cross, I'm not sure, but there's a leech in there somewhere. In fact, I think it runs the better part of his brain. Martin Leach the Honorable. The Honorable Martin Crossleach Feldman today issued an immediate injunction, immediately demanding and commanding the Obama administration to lift the moratorium on drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. I like to say it in Spanish just because I know that it drives the teabaggers apeshit. There's a lot of story out there about Martin Leach Cross Feldman. Not Cross Leach, Leach Cross. Martin Leach Cross Feldman. Let's see, what kind of a history did he have? Well, he graduated from Tulane University Law School in 1957. He was a member of the Order of the Coif. That's a sort of little Phi Beta Kappa kind of thingy for law school students. You know, people who have no lives and live in the carrels of the law library, and you only see them come out once in a while for meals. You know, they grow bat wings while they're doing that. Having graduated in 1957, Judge Martin Crossley.